All right. Spillo here, Brad Spillane, Men's Mental Health Show. On this cracking day outside here in Katoomba, it's an absolute Bobby Dazzler. Got a great show ahead today. In fact, a show I've very much been looking forward to because the first show that I ever did back in March 2019.
It was
2019, was a mate of mine, Wes. And here we are 148 episodes later. I'm pretty sure it's closer to 160. Wes is back and John Millam is with me as well today, and we're going to really jump into things in a moment. But before we do, just a quick thanks to Dale Hunt and Mounties Group for being long-term supporters of the Men's Mental Health Show, allowing us to keep going, get those podcasts up on the 30-odd platforms, and to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry. For all your staffing solutions, give Craig a call on 0416 700 870, 0416 700 870. And just before I introduce Wes and John, a lot of wonderful feedback has been coming in over the last week. You know, there was a chap from Bendigo that wrote to Chris Daniels, who was our guest last week, and wanting to establish a Walk It Off. That's wonderful, guys. I really encourage that. I think it's, you know, kudos to you for reaching out. And if you'd like to reach out during the show and perhaps give me a text message to ask either Wes or John, we'd like to be able to have you guys call in, but it's due to some technical issues here and a new board. We are unable to do that at this stage. So send me a text on 0404 077 666. Alternatively, if you've got a suggestion or somebody that you think might make a good guest that could bring some good content to the show, email me brad_spillane, S-P-I-L-L-A-N-E, at yahoo.com.au. All right, let's kick this off. Just a bit of housekeeping before we go. We went for a walk yesterday, Wes and I, and Munster's ponytail with my little shih tzu. It's off limits, so we won't be bringing that up. And I've got a couple of front rowers here, a couple of rugby boys. But first of all, Wes, man, how are you?
Yeah, good, man. Thanks for having me, Brad. It's good to be back here. Yeah, the first show I did with you was it was exciting for me to be a part of it, and it was a privilege. And I've been watching your development throughout the years, and it's been really good. I want to give you my condolences for Bodie as well, because I listened to him a lot, and unfortunately I didn't come down to meet him. But it was a funny thing, because I was always, one day I will,
yeah,
and I never got the opportunity to.
Yeah.
And when you rang that day to tell me of his passing, it was a real example of life so short,
yeah,
and precious. So precious. Yeah. And it was like, don't wait for tomorrow.
Yeah, mate, exactly. I mean,
act upon right now. Yeah.
What a wonderful bloke, hey?
Yeah, great. You know?
And just so different to so many therapists in a way that he was happy to share his own experience.
But
man, like you're probably my first fan and listener. I remember particularly in the early days you'd call me up after listening back to a podcast and give me your thoughts. And I attribute the fact that I am the man I am today because of, you know, yourself, Wes. You've helped me through a very, very dark time, you know, after my separation, and those years were 4 years or so were very difficult. And, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of times where you wanted to say, hey, man, you're doing this wrong. But you listened, you gave me that space, and I was able to work a lot of that out myself. But when the times when the advice was needed, you know, I greatly appreciate it, man. So kudos. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries, mate.
And Johnny?
Mate, good morning.
Mate.
Morning, Wes, and great to meet you, mate. I can't believe you kicked this bloke off, right? And now, right, you started something that has got to number two on the men's Australian men's podcast list.
So. What about that? What have we done?
Yeah, it's great. You know,
I should make mention to Feedspot, Arjun Ardmal, I think is his name, has asked me to make sure I give them a mention because I was sort of in disbelief. I think we've said this before, but they base it on, I think it's five different categories. So it's longevity, obviously, you know, we kicked that one. You know, content, I think we probably would have topped both of them, but, you know, it's just a wonderful piece of, you know, recognition, I guess, for some of the work we do and the places we go. And so, yeah, man, yeah.
Absolutely. And I just, Wes kicked that off, right? Yeah. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that connecting back to the, who would have thought, you know, 5 years ago or whatever. That...
Who would have thought you could do 5 years of talking about men's mental health? I thought we could have done it all in six episodes, you know? And it was, I think Andrew Wilson was with us that day as well. So, g'day, Andrew, if you're listening, mate. You got to come and join us again for a show.
So the average podcast, right, a lot of people are jumping in and because people have a voice and I really love that, right, that they get. And a lot of people have faces for radio like me, so it's a good opportunity. For
good company.
So, I really love the form as an expression, right? So many great ideas and stuff. I love that. But the average number of podcasts in any series is 7.
Yeah, right.
So the fact that you officially at 148 is amazing, mate. It's fantastic and a testament to both your growth, right, and your commitment to the cause, and also the people who've come in and lifted up like Bodie and yourself kicked it off and you've been a support and stuff, and that's amazing, because our message, if nothing else, is that men don't do the best things in life alone.
No.
Support, yeah.
Well, that's right, isn't it? Hey, just before we go, sorry, John, I wanted to make a special mention of Chris Daniels last week.
Yeah.
Who is your marmalade?
Marmalade
man.
Yeah, who is your marmalade?
Mate,
that was an excellent, I have to take my hat off. Chris just seems like a very Aussie bloke, semi-rural, getting on with life. Got hit with some of the worst stuff. And his response and his ability to share that and understand
his
it, unlock
set,
it, the work he's putting in, he's an inspiration.
Yeah.
I was so inspired by his
Well,
his
that's
words.
What we do, you and I, what we do, isn't it? Because we get to meet blokes like Chris.
Outstanding.
Which we don't often get to meet someone that's that, forthcoming, raw. So, man, kudos. And he got a call from a bloke in Bendigo who said, "Hey man, I want to start a walk it off." So kudos to Brian and Sean and also
those guys. Yeah, it's a great thing, and I love that because I speak a little bit in the sector, right?
Yeah,
trying
sure.
to get services loaded out, right, and get connected with the system, and the system isn't helping us, at times, right? In fact, I'm being nice now, right? So the
we're going to hear that system.
So we call it the missing middle.
Yeah.
And I know Chris mentioned it last time, men between 15 and 44. Well, it's actually, men between 29 and 60 that make the massive numbers of our worst statistic, which is, suicide. Men get to end their lives at a huge rate. So 75 plus percentage of all suicides are men.
That's a frightening statistic, isn't
and
it?
And most of them are in that middle-age group.
Yeah.
Now, the drama of it all and the implications of it all are terrible. But those men, and to be honest, our peers, right?
Yeah.
They're the foundation of community.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I don't want to get into sort of who's better or whatever, but fathers, providers, protectors, those things still hold, right? They're still part of the world.
Mm.
And when you lose them, you lose a lot. You have a lot of ripples that don't work for the community.
You know,
missing fathers, missing husbands, providers.
It's holes, isn't it? Immediately.
They're holes. Yeah. And I know we've all had experience of the challenge of that. And hearing Chris speak so, there's only one way of putting it. It's so courageously, about his own relationship with his loss.
So he lost his 15-year-old son. He took his life.
Yeah,
it caught me by surprise.
You did a great job sharing that time and helping the listeners access that, because what Chris was doing wasn't just about articulating his experience. He was illuminating the pathway for some of us also to move into that space and to open up.
Mm.
And that's healing for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get into this, like the systems and fathers and becoming better, being good role models. Wes lost his brother, Brad, who was in the year below me at school. God, it's getting close to 10 years now. It is
12.
12 years.
2012, yeah.
Wow. God, how are you with that, mate? Where are you on that journey?
That definitely kicked me. My dad passing in 2006 changed my thought process. And then my brother taking his own life in 2012 really sent me on my own journey of self-discovery and processing what's important, what's real, why, just the questions. Questions started. Right now, I've changed a lot since then, and I'm definitely been on a path of enlightenment, I guess you can say, towards what's important.
I have to say enlightenment, mate, the wings, right? They get it.
It's a funny term that people, well, not funny, but some people, I don't know, think it's a bit airy-fairy, you know, but I think it's a real thing, and I think it's a term that allows you to be at peace with yourself and the world and what goes on. So, I'm travelling reasonably okay at the moment with my brother passing. Yeah, I've definitely come to terms with it. And to be honest, I don't think he was meant to live past that age. Mm. I think he was finished on this earth.
Did you come to that idea over time as you look back?
100%. That wasn't the next day, the next year, the next... That was just in recent times, and I've said this to Brad. I said when he attempted to take his own life, he was unsuccessful because he wasn't done. He was still
he had
more purpose and he had reasons to stay. Now, not that my brother didn't have reasons to stay, but I just think on a whole, I can't picture him being here now. Mm-hmm. I picture him. Yeah. That's that. I picture his life up until when he took his own life, and that's it, unfortunately. But you know,
that really answers a lot of questions, doesn't it? You know, for someone going through grief or losing something like that. Because it's, I imagine if anyone, and both you fellas have, you know, you lost a brother, you lost a wife.
Yeah.
Did you lose your wife to suicide?
No. She passed by cancer. I lost my dad to suicide.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And my mother-in-law, which is probably less impactful, except that I found her and that's how it holds you. Goodness. But the interesting and like if we sat down, to be honest, to be brutally honest, and I should tell the listeners out there, if this is something that's going to bother you, right, I'm happy to talk or you know take a rest or just process it, but look after yourselves, right? Mm. But I think it's important to be straight up as blokes, as Chris was last week.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That raw, just stripped back.
Well, it's real.
It's confronting real. As it is. Right. It is.
We call it raw. But what's raw about it? It's real. Mm. And it's only raw because it grates on other people. Mm. Because they're not, you know, perhaps not ready or they haven't done the conditioning or they haven't put some thought into how you talk about these things without shame and a sense of cultural bias, right?
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And getting back to what I was saying was, I can only appreciate or try and understand, but the one thing that would be the questions that you'd be constantly asking yourself, why me? Why? Surely he could have, or she could have, or this could have. And I think the way that this bloke has gone about it over the years, like that's what he's come to terms with, that that was his time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, that's a massive, massive step to be able to then say,
it frees yourself from the anguish of it.
Because exactly.
If you keep trying to work it out, it leads you nowhere. So, because it just does your head in. So you have to accept it. And that's a massive part of accepting.
Yeah,
it's like, well, that's that. But in your case, Brad, it wasn't your time. So, because look at all the good you've done since then.
Oh, yeah.
You've gone on to amazing heights
of
helping and being there for others. And the gifts and the lessons you've taught others are phenomenal, you know. So, yeah.
No, cheers, man.
It's just acceptance.
There is there's a concept called post-traumatic growth, right, which is when we go through something, you've got a chance to reframe it to something positive.
Mm.
And as individuals, we can grow from the experience and bring in some real new resources. And as a community overall, we learn from the challenges and suffering of the community and actually come out of it. So with maybe more kindness, more understanding, more acceptance.
Mm.
More conversation.
More connection and conversation. Yeah.
So, all right. Let's move into something here, okay?
Okay.
Which is one of the reasons I've really been looking forward to the show, because one of the common things that I experience, and no doubt that you experience, John, is when there's a relationship breakdown and there's no way of recovering that relationship.
Hmm.
And more often than not, as men, we tend to do silly things. You know, in my case,
we all make choices. Some of
to
them
violence
good.
And threw shit in the pool.
Yeah.
You know, it was not the right thing to do. But why I really wanted Wes on today is because his journey is it's no different to what a lot of us have been through, but it's the way that he has gone about it that has really stood up for me. The composure, the patience, is just a testament to what this guy's been through. And I just thought, if you're cool with it, man, can you just give us a little bit of a background? I mean, we don't need to name ex-wife.
I'm happy to share my story, for sure. But I don't, this is my experience. It's not necessarily right for everyone, but this is how it worked out for me. And, the crux of it is I left my wife 3 years ago and ever since I've struggled to have a good relationship with my kids through lack of access.
Mm.
And I've had many challenges through financial, the pressures of the court system, but mainly just not seeing the kids, which has really, really pushed me to my limits. But what you're referring to is my ability to stay in control, I assume, and to not lose my proverbial. But it's sort of like... And I do, you do have to, breathe through it, because going through what I'm going through is I understand why you throw your household contents in the pool.
Mm.
I understand why you climb the Harbour Bridge and
stop traffic,
wave a banner. I get that because I'm there. Mm. I'm ready to act. But when you don't act and you sit back and you go, how's this going to look after this? It doesn't look good.
No.
So that's when you get the opportunity. I've had the opportunity to go, okay, as much as it sucks at the time, I need to, I guess, take the high ground or be the better person, be patient. Throughout my 3 years, the common thing from people who have been there before is it's a long game. And at the start of the game, when someone says it's a long game, it's the worst thing you want. You don't want to hear.
We spoke about this yesterday.
The long game is the furthest thing from what you want to hear. But it is so true. And I don't even know if I'm seeing any light, but I'm happy that I can go along holding my head high. I am disappointed by the system, so to speak, because it's... In my opinion, it's heavily staged against the man that leaves. Now, I left my wife. I never left my kids, but it's been made out that I've left my kids.
Mm.
And I've only left my kids because the opportunity to see my kids has been taken from me.
Mm.
And it's hard to have comments from people about not seeing your kids. And it's hard for my son, for instance, who's 15 and used to be my best buddy. He used to love...
Fishing,
going to the beach with me, doing all the cattle work on the farm. He was my sidekick.
You taught him to drive when he was 11 on your farm.
Like motorbikes and 10, all the stuff that dads and sons thrive on. He now won't answer his phone. I think I might be blocked on it. I don't know, but I cannot get through to him. Haven't spoken to him for 5 months. And deep down it kills me, and I miss that connection.
Chips away.
I fear... for his mental health, you know, and I'm not the saviour for his life because he's leading his own life, but I can enhance his life. I know that.
I
know he's missing out on a male role model.
And a wonderful mentor.
I wish I could be there for him, and I will be there for him when he's ready.
Yeah.
But for now, I've just got to sit back and play the long game, which is it's tough.
So you've gone through the court system. A number of times, you've sent yourself.
It's the process. So the process starts. With mediation and ends with final.
And there's been some orders put in place. To allow you for access.
Yeah.
Those orders haven't been met.
No.
Let's just call it what it is. It's not been met.
Yeah.
And every fortnight, you go to school.
Yeah, to pick up my daughter.
You pick up your daughter from primary school.
Because my son's 15 and he's at high school and, you know, we all know what it's like when you...
Yeah.
When they start to drop and get a bit of hair on them and you start to have your own thoughts and, you know, you don't know where you're at. So I've kind of given my my son some space.
Sure.
But my daughter's 11 and she's still at primary school and I need to be there for her. So I'll turn up at Friday every second fortnight to pick her up.
And you've got
orders stay. Orders pick her up from school. From the court drop to her say back to school on Monday to remove that... that confrontation at pick up and drop off.
Yeah.
And, you know, five times now she hasn't been at school on the Friday.
Yeah.
And, you know, the teachers, like the principal, she just doesn't want to know about it. They've got a copy of the orders. They know exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
Yet they are so unwilling to put their neck on the line. And to me it's – I don't even know who she rings or what she does about it. But for her to say, oh, it's just another – it's just, you know, she might be sick.
Yeah.
How many times does it have to happen before someone...
Well, it'll... To be honest, do you mind if I...
No, just tell me.
Because, mate, and I'm heartbreaks hearing your story, right? But I recognise it because I talk every week. I do Dads in Distress groups. So every week I talk to men who have a very similar story to yours, right? And there are certain things... You know, I smile when you say, "Oh, you've got to play the long game," because I say that all the time,
yeah.
Right? And it's one of those things where the truth is the truth, right? It's not nice. Someone described it. I heard it described this morning as someone said, "It's like you've got to get up and you know the window's banging in a breeze. You've got to get up and close the window, but you tread on a Lego on the way, and it hurts like buggery." But you still have to close the window, right? Yeah. So the truth can hurt. You know, you're doing so much necessary and so much right, and I take my hat off, mate. You're doing great. But there's also some ways that you're like sitting in this pain as a guy in this situation. It's absolutely normal and completely reasonable response to a totally outrageous situation.
Mm.
But there are also some reframes that can change things if we can learn to accept it, right? So, for instance, the system is not our friend as men, but there are other people, you know, women sometimes have an experience that's negative as well. 100%. So, but I've got to say the system is not a man's friend when it comes to family law and the structures around it. And there is a reason for that.
Yeah.
And that is because... In many ways, men have set that up themselves.
Sure.
Because we're scary when we're angry.
Mm. Mm.
And here's a simple situation. You've got a mum going to the police. They don't have the capacity or even the interest to investigate the detail. That's not their gig, right? So but they do know that more often than not, if the man is problematic, the outcome is a battered or, you know, dead woman. So they err on the side of, call it lazy, call it unreasonable, call it unfair, definitely all of those things sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's they're making a choice that's the easiest for them to keep, you know, they believe in most cases.
It's just, it's categorised, it's assumed immediately. And it's this a soft choice. Not...
Yeah,
you know
it's
what I mean?
A soft choice. They're not making an assessment about who you are.
Yeah.
They're making an assessment about how can I avoid potentially being in more trouble than I am at the moment.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Right. So that's not fair, but it's you can understand it.
Sure.
What we need to do, and what I love about it is we need to find a way to live under the unfairness.
Mm. Yeah.
And not and also not just survive, right, which is that... Oh, you know, grumpy and getting up every morning feeling the pain, but to embrace the unfairness in a way that we were talking about a few weeks ago about you can de-escalate by moving into it and accepting it, which you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, in this is an opportunity somewhere that I can find something to be. So you're growing as a bloke because you're taking on a sense. I heard you say it. You said... I can hold on to this because, you know, I feel like I'm doing the right thing. Mm. So we can actually stand in our dignity, in our strength.
Yeah.
We can understand that at the end of this process, we're going to be a better person and the father that our kids are engaging with down the track. Because they will, if we have that strength and energy,
if you hold that space,
the father that they end up getting to know is going to be an amazing example for them.
Yeah, because they will remember.
I think for a lot of blokes, like just going on what you're saying, John, also it's the manifestation and the rumination that creates within us as men, and often our skill set for that is to push that down, to not bring it to the surface, to not express... Yeah. That frustration or that anger, and it will come out in other ways, generally speaking. And one thing, you know, from the many blokes I talk to, and I'm sure you can echo this, is standing from the outside looking at a mate here, the reason I think he's so skillful at processing this horrible situation is because he talks about it.
Yeah.
He brings it to the surface. Yeah. He expresses his frustration and anger. At times, but he doesn't act on it, you know.
That's true, and I've got a great support network. I've got some solid friends in my life. You know, I've got a really good friend who's a trained psychologist, and he's instrumental to my mental safety, if you like.
Because he's got what
I need to be told, and the questions that I need to ask myself to get my own answers.
Mm.
So I'm very fortunate in that regard. But if you took this journey on alone, and you internalized everything, whew, that's a
you can see why many men have taken their lives for less. You know,
it's a pressure cooker.
Well, you know, 40% of male suicide can be traced back to some form of relationship breakdown.
Wow. Wow.
So you know, we're talking 40%. Huge numbers. We're talking
that's men, massive. Man.
More men die than the entire road toll.
Yeah, wow.
Right. Yeah, of course, it's almost twice that. Mm.
And that would mean that a relationship breakdown or relationship issues, situational distress that comes from that, is likely to actually be responsible for the deaths of more men than the entire roll told as well.
Mm.
So just that
it's
segment
a scary statistic.
Of it, right? So we're talking, you know, in the thousands. Right?
And sorry, but we're sort of digressing here a bit, coming back to what you're saying. Or have you gotten to that stage? I'm sure it's been very difficult, no doubt. But have you ever questioned why you're still here? Like, have you ever said to yourself, you know, I'm not seeing my kids. This is just continuing on. It's now through the community. It's impacting my work. I've spent all my money.
Why didn't I think about tapping out?
Yeah,
tell you, mate.
Have you ever questioned yourself? And I'm sorry to put you on the spotlight.
That's
but
valid.
Have you ever said
that's
mate,
valid because
I'm,
you get
I'm
pushed?
Over this.
I have never been suicidal, but I've often thought about selling everything I own and going, like leaving.
Yeah,
the a form area. Of social suicide, almost like
I did when I went to Perth, for example.
And obviously, for my mum to go through what she went through with my brother, like I could. That's a reason why
that's a massive anchor, isn't it?
I wouldn't do anything to myself, but and mum hinted towards that a couple of years ago when I was dark and I was down, and I assured her that I never would, and I was quick to say before I do that if that was a thing, I would sell up and I'd go because there's so much more to gain from our lives and this world than that thing that is haunting you, you know?
Mm.
So I could happily go, you know, it's kind of given up on the situation and just go, I'm beaten.
Yeah.
There's nothing, I can't fight this anymore.
Yeah.
Because if I keep fighting it's going to end bad. Yeah. So I'm just going to go. And that's what I have thought about doing.
So the men often avoid, like one of our strategies for dealing with that really challenging stuff, even in relationships, is avoidance, right? That's something that we've been trained to do. It's interesting. Can I backtrack for one sec?
Yeah, sure.
You were asking a question of Wes then, right? Mm. And that is a good chance for me to illustrate to everyone how you asked that question.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Right, because, you know, out of your concern and out of your connection with Wes, to be honest, you were quite ambiguous about it.
Mm. Yeah.
You didn't go direct.
Didn't, no.
Now, You were, you know, anticipated and it's worked true, out what he was
true,
doing.
John.
But if you were in the middle of a suicidal thought or a suicidal period, someone giving you a chance to not directly respond is something that we should, you know, sometimes we're not saying no, we're just... Because somebody isn't asking us directly, we're get
giving
an
them
out.
We're giving them an out, yeah, yeah, or giving them another option.
So, if is it all right? Just you know, I know we were all so, touched, yeah, and talk. The listeners here. I would just like to reframe that question. Is that all right? If
yeah,
I do
100%.
Mate? Yeah, yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. So, I would just ask, and this for all those fantastic. Listening that are interested. I would ask it this way: Look, Wes, you're going through a lot, mate. Any bloke I know going through what you're doing would question whether it's worthwhile hanging around. I'm really worried about you. Is it all right if I ask you, are you thinking of killing yourself?
Yeah, yeah. And that's it's such a real thing to discuss, because even when you go down that road, when you start the question, Brad, I knew where you were going.
Yeah.
And then straight away there's this thing comes over you, like the severity of it.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about statistics here and how many guys do it. So it is so real, you can't tiptoe it. You can't tiptoe around it anymore. Yeah. And this is something that we learned years ago when we were doing the Cranback Classic. We were raising money for Lifeline down Northern Beaches. And David Thomas, he said to us, me and my brother Rob, who were...
He's from Lifeline, David Thomas.
Yeah. He's, I'm not sure if he still is, but he was back in 17, 18. He said, you guys need to be armed, because if you're going to host these events... you're going to have people come up to you who look at you to have the answers to their problems. So I suggest you do this accidental counsellor course, which they run. So David suggests that he would pay for four or five of us to do this course. And I got in touch with Liz, who was the teacher of it.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, forget that. She goes, I can take about 20, 25.
We got 20-odd there. There was 19 or something.
So I went through the list of men who come to the classic in the past, and I... because it's not for everyone, you know, but I singled out some and I asked them, and majority of them said yes.
Yeah.
And it was great. So there was 25 of us in this room, instructed by Liz, teaching us only in a brief, you know, 8-hour period.
Yeah.
You're not going to become a counsellor in 8 hours, but it all got the point of it was being able to ask someone, are you suicidal?
Yeah.
That's a very hard question to ask.
Yeah, it's a bit challenging.
And one of the last things we did that day... the whole day she had an alter ego, and she was Bruce, who attended the Cranback Classic. He was a bit down, and she'd come in and out of Bruce. And then she said in the end, now I'm going to go back into Bruce, and I want all of you to, you know, you've interacted with him all weekend. You realise he's down. Now it's time to ask that question. And she slumped in the chair, went into Bruce, and the room went silent. And out of 25 of us, there was only three that asked, Bruce, I'm worried about you. Are you suicidal? And now I was there and it was, I wasn't one of the three.
Because
it is an extremely hard thing to have the words to come out of your mouth.
For more reasons than one.
Because I think this is what we need to break down as a society is we've got to stop making it a taboo subject. It's a terrible topic, but the statistics say it's so real, it has to become directly spoken about.
Yeah, well, John and I speak about this quite often, and our thoughts, and we think, incidentally, we think Lifeline, Beyond Blue, all of those black dogs are doing wonderful, wonderful things, and I think they're restricted in how they can go about it. But when you hear or something that's on the media, it's immediately swept under the rug, 13, 16, 14, or 13, 11, 14, right?
Yeah.
Why are we able to talk about gambling and what gambling does to you?
Alcohol.
What are we? Why are we able to promote alcohol and then say what alcohol does to you? But yet we cannot mention a method when it in media when it comes to suicide. In fact, if the words are mentioned, they're blotted out if it's on the captions, right?
They never actually say it. They always just finish the story with.
But it's not real.
It's
how can you make something
still tiptoeing around a topic?
It's interesting. How do you remove stigma by insisting on stop people not
by
saying
adding it.
Something?
Yeah.
Right. You know, it only makes stigma worse. Yeah. It's fascinating your description of that course, because you know, like I do suicide prevention courses, and in Brad and I attended one quite recently, right?
Yeah, for Roses in the Ocean, yeah.
And again, you know, like the room was, you know, if the room was full of women, right?
Yeah, we're the only two blokes out of about 30 people.
Yeah. And one of the challenges, I was so interested, you know, it's not some blokes, you know, it wasn't for them. And I get that because, like, I, you know, there's an example, just friend group from school of mine, one of the blokes was going through a pretty bad breakup. He ended up, you know, being very down and suicidal, and his mates on the sailing group, his mates were really worried about him and needed to ask. And I had no idea how to ask.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, so I just, you know, gave some advice. They spoke to the Lifeline and Lifeline gave them some advice. And afterwards, I met with one of the guys and I said, well, you know, I'm glad you threw it. You know, I'm available if anyone wants to follow up. But men don't follow up once they get through that. They say, because of stigma and shame and that sort of cultural obstacle, they go, I'm okay again now. Yeah. I've got through that situation of the stress.
Yeah. And that,
And now I won't follow up and do the work that you know is necessary because you've done it constantly.
Mm. Mm.
And that leads me on to that check-in that we used to talk about.
Yeah.
It's so real. So me and Brad have been, you know, obviously mates for a long time now, but we don't often speak, you know, all the time, but when we do, either of us has to answer the phone and immediately you know.
Well, you can always tell within two words.
Yeah.
Right. You're like, oh shit.
And then you might have rung to tell him a story about something.
Yeah.
Brad might answer and say, and I know he's flat. Mm. The story becomes irrelevant.
Yeah.
The topic's now what's going on. And then he's on your mind. So it's not a few months between phone calls. It's next week.
It's next week. And he's so good at, he'll get one of the other lads just to check in as well.
Yeah.
You know? And then a week later, the minute he says hello, hey, whatever, you know straight away if he's still down or he's back up. And then you can tell the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then you know he's had a little slump or a little down, but he's on the road back up.
Yeah.
So you still check in, but you know, it sort of puts your mind at ease. And I think that's what's lacking with what you're just saying about having that tough conversation and then not following it up.
Yeah.
Well, the land is connection.
Well said, Wes.
Right? So let's move to the land for blokes, right? The blokes' land is connection. That's the name of the land we're in. The territory, places we need to be in to make that land good, right, and flourishing for a bloke, are things like reflection. When we're there and someone points something out, you don't bounce it back. You say, what's in this for me?
Right? Yeah, take it on.
Yeah, or I've had this experience. What do I now know, right? Yeah. What might I do differently? How might I take it? Particularly relevant for things like, you know, grief or, you know, a loss of something we loved and valued because the important answers are going to shape how we move on, not in a broken way but in a rebuilt, restructured way that is even more useful, you know, like is even more normal than our previous normal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does to me.
And, of course, the other territory that we need to inhabit to make this land, bloke land work so much is something we are really bad at as blokes, which is curiosity. Now, Brad was accusing me of being a curious guy. It's intentional, right? Because
100%.
Every single experience a man has is improved. In my mind, this is my theory. In my mind, it is improved by asking more questions about it.
Yeah.
So
I definitely agree with that statement.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's both... And because, you know, I said last time there's nothing we can build, borrow or buy that will improve our inner land, right? We can cover up and put off. You can drink your way into feeling good. You can, but it's all, you know, smoke and mirrors.
Mm.
Nothing you do from outside has the legs or the power to transform and improve us.
Mm.
Everything has to come from inside.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. I mean, as long as I've been doing this, you'd think I'd be getting good at it, but it's not so the case. I can't have those conversations with probably 90% of my mates, right? So In other words, if a mate rings up and I might sound a bit flat or I'm not up for conversation, I just put the mask on and we'll go through it. We'll talk about how the Aussies beat the Kiwis yesterday in the cricket or whatever all that bullshit is. Yeah. But, you know, when as he says, if he rings, I answer, right? And I think it would have been 3 weeks ago. It was just really dark. I was right in the middle of it. And I just said to him straight out, I said, mate, I think I apologised, you know, which I shouldn't have done, but I go there with Wes. I can talk about that darkness. I can go into that conversation of what I've been thinking, what I've been saying 2 inches from a mirror. And I don't repeat that to anyone, but I can with this bloke.
Absolutely.
It's so imperative. Like these, I've written down a couple of points that you've made so far with relation to the compounding grief or suicidal thoughts. You're making a commitment. Like the way you said I made that commitment to mum is paramount.
It's an anchor.
It's an absolute anchor. Yeah. There was also, they're all C's, incidentally. It was creating that peer support network or mate network or mental health network.
Yeah, internal mates, right?
Incredible skill, right? And that check in regularly, right? And sometimes you sort of think before, you have a conversation with yourself before you ring. You go, well, I checked in with him yesterday and the day before, maybe I need to give him a break. I'll give Benny a call. And Benny might just say good day and see how you're going.
Yep.
So these are wonderful skills that I don't think I would have had. Well, I know I didn't have 10 years ago.
No. Yeah. And, you know, we're trying to build these in the community and stories like yours are an example.
But it also
of why.
Comes with your age as well.
When a
younger man has some of these skills, it's like you really sit back and you go, wow, you're beyond your years. Like you are...
You wonder what he went through.
It's really admirable and it's really noticeable.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to upset him. We watch Maths. Sorry to go off topic here.
I don't.
No. I know John loves Maths. He's waiting for it to finish so he can just watch it all at once without the ads.
All right.
He is.
What's Maths, mate? I don't know. You're on your own here,
Are you seriously doing this to me?
I'm backing
in. Come on. No, I won't put you in it. I know your pride's so important here, man.
Every man has to have his secrets, right?
But But there's some wonderful examples of really poor behaviour and some extraordinary behaviour that you see from the show, you know, of how where we're going wrong as blokes or why are we getting such a bad name as blokes.
Absolutely.
But you know, with that, and I think one of the things that's come out of this year particularly is the fact, as opposed to many of the other years, is other blokes are calling out blokes and saying, hey, man, that's wrong. That's a behaviour you need to work on, more importantly, change.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an enormous step for us to do as blokes because, first of all, you're questioning the bloke's integrity, his pride. Yeah, you could be putting him into a very difficult situation.
It's holding a bloke to account.
It's holding a guy to account, but it's also in the way that it's delivered.
Yeah.
You know,
what you're touching on, like, so... Yeah. I've got four territories in the land of bloke, dude, right? As always, I've got a list, right? Number one is reflection because we need to know where we are and who we are to know where to go and who to go to, right?
Yeah.
Number two is curiosity because that's the superpower for intentional interaction with the world. You need to know what's going on for other people as well as yourself. You start by asking yourself who you are and then you ask the rest of the world who they are and then you can work out how to connect. The third one, and here's what you were just saying, the third territory to visit in Blokeland is values. We must have a code. Men need a code, right? And it's about values tell us what's important in life. Beliefs tell us what we hold true without evidence, right?
Yeah.
So this sense of going, well, I think this is true. Is it true? That's the curiosity and reflection that feeds into values. Once we know our values, create a set of behaviours, put them in a code and follow them like your life depends on it because who.
That just rolls off the tongue for you. You know that. I hope you know that.
When it's put like that, it's perfect.
Well, you have a code. I've heard it today.
Yeah.
So,
it's a natural thinking.
When you said, I promised this to my mother,
You
put that at the top and anchored to a truth for you. You believe that that is now your truth and your code. Yeah. I loved it, right, by the way. And then, of course, the fourth land that we must visit, because values is our code, how we behave into the world because we've asked the question. What we need to then do is work out how to take our values and interact with the world in a real meaningful way. Connection is the land, right? So let's connect. So the fourth territory is compassion, because compassion is empathy plus commitment plus action, right? For us to connect with others, for us to make meaningful interaction and connection with, you know, what you could call it, love or regard, right? We need to understand that those people are like us, that they're, what they're going through is I can touch that feeling in myself and I want to help them, not because I get anything out of it, but because I understand what they're doing and feeling.
Yes.
And I'm going to take action, and that action is meaningful for them, not for me.
Yeah, I like that, man. Like, I'm just thinking, you know, like when I look at that, those, some of those blokes on maths, right, they get on the couch, they know they've done wrong, or what they've said is done wrong. One bloke said, muzzle your woman, or whatever it was. Then they get told why it's so wrong, okay? But a lot of the time, the response from these men is, I'm being attacked, okay? So they'll sit in there in that brewing rage of warmth and chest, you know, going at 100 miles an hour. And then when they get asked a question afterwards, they don't have the answer. And it is as clear as water how obvious it is. But they genuinely don't know. They don't have any idea as to how to go about making that apology or that change. So they say, which isn't a bad thing, what do I need to do? Right?
Yeah, they ask.
Because they've never done it before. They've never put those things in curiosity, connection, compassion into practice. So they need to be walked.
They need to come.
Or we need to be walked.
And sit humbly at the fire.
Yep.
And talk to the elders, because once upon a time, that's how they were educated. Right, you weren't a man until you had gained control of yourself, and you could regulate your impact on others. Now, you know, we've missed a step these days. We don't need to, you know, recreate villages and get rid of, you know, towns and stuff. But what we do need is to build structures and go back into structures. Like, you've got an informal care group. You've created Team Wes, and it's Team Brad, and it's Cross.
It's massive. Yeah.
That's the fire you guys sit at and learn and hold each other.
Yeah.
Both. And I love that vision. Like, can you come with me on that? Vision is holding can be a caring gesture. It can be a protective gesture. I hold someone back.
Yeah.
Or it can be a submission. You can put someone in a hold, right?
Sure.
All of those things are valid for a wise man helping a growing man to reach his potential.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon that I honestly reckon you should write a book. I do, man. I think because of, and the first part of that book would be of your experience, right? And through that, you'd talk about the mistakes or what you've learned from your mistakes or how you grew. And in the back end of that, it's, you know, it's that humbleness. It's that narrative of being so vulnerable. It's of how you've improved as a man or what you've gotten from it to be able to encourage other blokes how to go about things. And I firmly believe that would
We all make mistakes, but I think you can rephrase into what your learnings are, you know.
Like, yeah, that's a, that's good too.
Like, thank goodness we all make mistakes. Yeah, otherwise.
Because, we've had on my recent years, different practices, you know, my yoga practice and meditation and that sort of road I've gone down comes with a lot of kickback from the traditional man, you know, the tough man.
Both these blokes are front rows, incidentally.
Yeah.
How many yoga classes have you done where you're not the only – where is there's been another bloke in the class?
Oh.
Could you count?
Well, probably 20% of them.
Right.
So predominantly women, yeah. Yeah, but it teaches you great, great things, you know, mindfully. Like, it's
absolutely,
the philosophies of yoga are amazing,
and the breath work, which it brings you back into
internal.
Yourself.
Yeah. It's internal, and the gratitude, like, and that sort of gets me back to, you know, depression and suicide is like the eternal gratitude for the breath.
Yeah,
there's nothing else that matters.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's probably one of the very only things that all religions can agree upon.
Yeah.
Is the power of the breath, or that connection of
breath of life.
Yeah.
I
well
that.
Said, man.
Sorry, can I ask a question about the sense of, like, when you're sitting, you know, sorry, about the breakup, right? Mm. The idea, what was, because grief is a normal response. So what about the loss of the relationship and so on? What were you grieving? You know, like, what was the hurt in the relationship? You talk about your kids, you know.
I think it's just it's a change of the environment. You know, you've got to adjust to, you're grieving the loss of what you once had.
Yeah.
Yes, and the familiarity of it all, like coming home where you get to see your kids, you take it for granted. So all of a sudden, you're not going back to that environment. You don't get the daily rewards, if you like, what you used to have. But that's the adjustment. That's the loss. That's the grief. But then traditionally you would be longing for the next period when you get to see him. So you just sort of count down the sleeps, if you like.
Yeah.
When you don't have that, that's a whole nother form of grief.
Yeah.
I've said to a few people that are close, it's like at times it feels like my kids have passed away.
Yeah.
Because I can't even talk to them. Yeah. Like, let alone see them, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an adjustment, getting used to a new way of life in the back of your mind, having the long game in mind.
I love that. I love what you touched on there, because my belief is grief is not about what you had. It's about the losing the right to expect it, more of it, right? So you lose your life that you've invested in the future. Mm. So, you know, because if you go away for a camping trip or a work trip or something, you're separated from your kids, right? But that feels okay because there's an expectation that you will have your relationship back, pick up.
Yeah, when you return. Yeah.
And you described it beautifully where you said you've lost, you know, your life. You've lost the future, right? And I think, absolutely, that's grieving. But one of the challenges then is to respond to that in a way that actually, you know, starts to heal us and not hurt us, right? So how did you, you know, when you're sitting there, how did you avoid anger, or how did you, you know, avoid resenting that or blaming someone?
I think gratitude is what you've got to really look for. What's
gratitude.
And there's always someone worse off.
Yeah,
you never. I read this, or was told this a long time ago. You're never going to be the best, but you're never going to be the worst. You're always going to be somewhere in the middle. So when you get down and out, and you think, oh, you know, poor me. Well, there's someone worse off.
At the time I thought I was the only person in the world going through this.
And you're the worst. But hang on, you live in Australia for one, arguably the best, safest country in the world.
Right.
You know, there's so much opportunity here, and we all the average privileged Australian who's never left, hasn't really lived, they don't know sort of hardship, you know. So once you've seen a bit of the world and you've had some knocks and you've had a full day.
Mm.
So that's what gets me through.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky enough to not stay down for long. Like, if I go to pick up my daughter from school and, again, she's not, she's absent on the Friday I'm supposed to get her, I've got the shits. Like, I ring a few people, I vent, I get it off my chest. Yeah. I might go quiet for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
But then I generally go to bed and wake up the next day,
and
I'm back appreciating what's important.
Yeah. See, you're not a big texter either. You actually ring people, which is rare as rocking or shit in itself.
Yeah. Just on that, can I like, just some research came out. They did some research on a group of teenagers who texted and
called
right. And what was amazing, like, there was a noticeable, like a medical difference in hormones released as a result of the call, right? So you increased serotonin, which is a feel good hormone. It's part of the,
gives you euphoria.
Yeah, it's a part of the opioid groups. And you reduced cortisol, which is a hormone that kicks in for stress, right? So, when you're in fight, flight, freeze, or faint, right, cortisol's part of that picture. And what they found was texting didn't have that effect. In fact, it increased cortisol. So there was more stress in texting and connecting with someone through a text.
Yeah.
And there was more reward. So you were literally given a gift of, hormone, loving hormone, right, when you spoke to someone. Now, isn't that a great example of why we're all kind of worried about social media and why losing the art of connection. Conversation and connection.
Connection is the key.
Yeah.
Real life connection.
Yeah. Like the amount of times, particularly when you moved up to foster, this is another wonderful skill of yours or strength or life asset, is that drive from Sydney to Foster. You probably never once listened to the radio. You always had a book you were listening to. Between that book, you'd often... I mean, we had conversations where I talked to you in Sydney and you'd arrived at Foster.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I remember once, and I feel like an idiot now, but the phone call you gave to me, you go, I actually got the Bible on Audible. We both went to a Catholic school, but we're not practicing Catholics.
I'm happy to talk about that. That's fine, yeah. I listened to the Bible in its entirety, 80 hours.
Why?
Because it's the most read book in the world. And I thought, what's the hype about?
Where's the wisdom?
I'm gonna find it for myself and form my own conclusions.
Which, how good's that, man?
Well, it's not. It's a lot of it's a waste of.
Yeah, but okay, hours, sure.
That's for sure.
Sure.
But I'm definitely not.
But religious. The following 6 months from that conversation, we often went to something that you'd found or you that you took
references.
That was such a wonderful positive thing.
Yeah.
Well,
enlightened thing. Yeah, parts of it are okay, but just on the audiobooks and the drive, it was more about the mindfulness and the psychology books that really rewarded me.
Yeah,
and then you see, and I used to love. I don't do it as much now because I've more gone to the podcast, to be honest. But I love having a conversation with anyone who reads and what are you reading? What do you like? Because if I value someone's friendship and they say, you've got to read this book, I'm so curious as to why.
He does the exact same thing, this bloke. Right? I've only been in the car with him twice, but he's always got tapes or listening back to podcasts or hearing what other blokes have got to say about their experience and just forever learning. Forever, sponging information.
Well, that's your curiosity right there.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated with anyone who's got something interesting to say.
Yeah.
I want to hear it.
I'm worried now because, when you start to get old and you have those senior moments, right? I forget someone's name.
It's Wes and Spillo.
I have two things I can choose as when you worry about it, you can go, okay, it's either this or this.
Yeah.
So the first one is I'm losing it, right? Which is I've been in too many scrums and that's now coming back to haunt me.
Yeah.
But the second one is that I listen to so much stuff.
You're full.
I'm full.
Yeah,
right?
And
I lose a bit of the stuff out the side. Yeah, so I'm going to go with that one. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Regardless of what my mates say.
I'm also, when you've used enlightenment, I love that idea. Because I used to, people would give front rowers a hard time. And I'd say, mate, we are the cleverest of the entire football fraternity because we're constantly seeking enlightenment, right?
What to get out of the scrums.
Yeah, in the idea that we would like to turn, basically trying to turn someone inside out and understand, understand that, the workings, right? The slowest often has the best perspective, right?
That's a good point.
But enlightenment for you, I love the concept of turning a light on. What lit up for you?
Probably there was more than what I knew. That's the lie. It's like you.
These greater things out there.
You can't sit. You can't be content with what you've got. So there's no one's arrived at their final destination. If you think
there's no finish line for better.
And this is something that's come up with a few of my mates on kind of my inner circle, if you like, to a few of my older mates who they're still mates. They always will be mates, but they've got no desire for self-improvement because at 40, 50 years of age, they think, well, I've done everything. I've achieved.
Mate, I was like that at 22. I thought I knew everything.
And I'm completely
the opposite.
Yeah. But a 22-year-old doesn't get away with it. Yeah. A 55-year-old with all the good things in life, absolutely. He might.
So I think it's always wanting to improve is what the enlightenment is. It's always not being content, always wanted to try and be a better version of yourself.
Mm. So it's so impressive because, you know, like we're driven by biases. You know, we decide how to – humans are driven by their desire to cut corners, right, and save resource. One of the big biases, of course, is the concept, you know, I think it got around a bit, the Dunning-Kruger effect, right? We don't know what we don't know, so we think we know it all. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and one of the challenges of as you then learn or open up to curiosity, you realize that you actually don't know a lot more than you do know. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, making that choice to step into the world of growth.
Mm.
How did you do that?
Well, I said it earlier. I referred to yoga earlier, and yoga has played such a instrumental role in my life.
Yeah, cool.
And that's because the basic philosophies and the principles of it are so enlightening. It's such a powerful practice to partake in. And I think that was definitely the real start to honouring myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really looking inside.
Yeah. You can't cut corners in yoga.
Nah, but there's no judgment either.
No.
You're not good at yoga. You practice yoga.
And in
my most favorite yoga environments, there's no judgment, and there's a guy I used to play rugby with. He's not involved anymore, but he was a big, real big fella, 140-150 kilos, and I encouraged him to come, and there was no judgment there. He couldn't do hardly any of it, but he used to love it.
He used to
love being welcomed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, because he spent a lifetime being judged.
Yeah, and stepping into that space, it's kind of beyond that. You change the circle, right? You push out your boundaries.
Yeah,
because if you get, you know, if you have an experience that is beyond where you've stopped in the past, right, and go to a new space, your limits have just expanded as well, right? Yeah. And then what more is available to you in the world, right? I remember I used to. When I first started yoga and Pilates, right, it was like this sense of, you know, you had to go away from the gym to go and do this other stuff. And I thought, I was typical response, what is this rubbish?
Yeah.
And I started doing it and it was so challenging and so interesting and hard. But there was so much going on that I really even didn't understand, but it was compelling. So then I kept trying to go to new experiences. I end up doing, you know, those Zumba dance classes? I end up doing them. Now, that was ridiculous, me walking into a dance class.
You enjoyed that?
Oh, loved it. Right? Absolutely. And blokes would give you a hard time and I'd say, mate, I'm the one in a room with 30, you know, women dancing and, and having a good time. Who's the idiot, right? But, that was just like so much confronting that very idea of judging.
Yeah. 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 It's being vulnerable. Like you just to go to your first class is hard because you're putting yourself up for judgment when you realize there is no judgment.
Yeah.
That's where you get comfort.
Yeah. How do you
apply that to so many parts of your own life?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. You know, how did you apply that very idea to getting through a breakup?
I was going to ask something. It's on the along the lines of that. Let's say before your brother passed away. So let's go back, say, 32 years of age, right? Do you reckon that going through what you've been through over the last 2 years, you'd be able to handle it? Like, would you have been at 32?
There's something about my age and where I'm at mentally is definitely enabled me to handle what I've been through. I'd hate to be going through this with the arrogance of being younger.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what I was saying when I was 20. I knew everything.
Yeah, yeah. But it's all part of your learning.
Right? Yeah, yeah. See, I'm that massive flip switch for me. I love sounding and looking stupid. I love being the dumbest bloke in the room. Yeah. I do. I like, you know, someone said, oh, man, I love your show, for example. And what's your secret? Well, it's pretty easy. I just bring blokes in that are smarter than me. And that's what I do. I bring blokes in here that are smarter than me. Because although it's a wonderful thing of what we bring to the table, I feel pretty selfish about it because I'm the one that's benefiting more than anyone, you know. I'm the one that's had to sit in and do these 150 shows and hear all of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I get to a situation now, I can go, oh, yeah, I remember having that guy come in and I'll try that method. It's kind of like, you know, we talk about, like my daughter and I didn't speak for 6 years.
Yeah. That's a result of the long game, right?
Well, that's right. Exactly. And you know, she called me last night. She's coming up next week. Oh, you know, I can't wait.
But when I asked her yesterday about Charlize, I was like,
yeah.
And you answered. I was like, that's so good. It warmed me.
Yeah. Well, you've got an extraordinary relationship with Mackenzie, your eldest.
My oldest, yeah. Yeah. And when I do talk about not seeing my kids, my oldest, Mackenzie, me and her are so tight.
And she's really special too,
yeah,
man. Like,
yeah, she's a beautiful
She's
human.
Years ahead. I mean, yeah. What is she, 19?
She's not 19 this year, but she's so wise for her age. She's I'm so proud of her.
It's an interesting thing. What you're describing, like what came to mind there is a technique that, you know, some therapists use.
Right.
And when you, like, I'll go back to that point in a sec, sorry. But it's called linking, right?
Okay.
So the idea that you, as you grow and wise up, right, as you gain the resources that come from going through stuff and answering those questions, right, and surviving, right, we can then go back and look at the things in our lives that were really tough and have left their echoes in our psyche, in our situation, right?
Chamber.
You know, like it could be, you know, we could still be in a victim mode in certain places because we, you know, we're trying to make things safe as a kid and so on. And safety is everything. What we can do now is, what, you know, like you've got some resources now and some understanding and, you know, mindfulness and stoicism and a sense of like resilience and openness. Vulnerability is a huge thing to put back to. So we start to bring up the feelings that are sort of unresolved from the past or some of the issues that we're still carrying. Mm. And we link them. We start to bring the resources of now to the issues of the past.
Mm.
And that tends to unravel things a little bit, right? So acceptance, if we can accept ourselves now, can we allow the parts that are still carrying the echoes of the past, can we offer them the opportunity to accept themselves?
Yeah, yeah. And just on that, everything that's happened to me in my life is part of my journey and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
I don't regret any part of it. Without my story, I wouldn't be here. So I've learned to be so content within myself, and every single thing, good or bad, that's happened to me is a part of my journey, which has led me to be here right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love to ask blokes the question, if I gave you a magic wand that had the ability to pull out all the worst times things you've gone through, the worst things you've gone through in your past, however, the consequences are, you know, would be a different present,
different outcome.
What would you remove?
None. It's all the story. It's all the journey.
That's a crazy response when you think about it, because, you know, people are sitting here going, man, I'm suffering because of what I've gone through.
Yeah.
And yet you wouldn't give it up.
Yeah.
Because you value who you are now. Yeah. You've got some confidence. And
yeah, there's a great learning in this. My first ever audiobook was called The Four Agreements.
Oh, yeah, with Don Miguel Ruiz.
What a powerful book. Yeah. Now, he refers to you are the main actor in your own story.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your mum, your dad, your brother and sister, they all play supporting actors.
Yeah, yeah.
You are the centre of your world. You don't need to compare yourself to someone else because they're irrelevant. Like, you're it. You've got to really embrace how important and special your story is.
Absolutely. And I love that idea because, you know, because I've got a poster of the Four Agreements on my wall, right? And so I have to remember it's not about me all the time. Right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I use this thought with blokes. If you were walking through a shopping centre, right, and you're thinking like a guy in you know, like men that I talk to in breakdown relationships, they see the system attacking them, their ex attacking them, they see, you know, the loss of social connection and so on because, you know, the partner's friends are gone. They feel attacked by, you know, people they thought, you know, even family members will, you know, they're forced to make a choice, right? Yep. And that's really tough, right? So men suddenly see the world as against them. If you'll just take that concept and put it into you visiting the local mall, shopping mall, you're walking along, that would be similar to you walking along and every person wandering through the mall is out to get you.
Mm.
Now, is that the case?
It could feel like that, yeah.
Yeah, so isn't...
But is it the case? No.
No.
It's not.
So is what would... Yeah. If you thought about walking through the shopping mall as you do and that they're going about their business and if you, you know, if you catch an eye contact, you smile and it's a family trend, so you might move out of the way. But you're going about your business. No, everyone's existing together, right? And it's a successful process.
Yeah.
They've got their interests, and if you clash, if you're in the way, they might get annoyed, but then they move on back in. So, you know, if you're waiting to queue up, right, the people are in front of you, are your obstacle, the people behind you are your, you know, they're immaterial to you, right? It's your perspective. So you have the power to see yourself as an individual who is okay, and the people around them are individuals who are okay. And sometimes when we connect, it's up to us to choose to see whether that's an obstacle or an opportunity. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's walk through life expecting everyone to be okay.
And that's a good way to another way to look at it is, you know, when you come across problems or you're unsure of how something's going to go with a relationship, you spin it on its head. If I were them and they were me, how would I feel?
Yeah.
And immediately you realise how you feel is wrong because you've just looked at it from their point of view, and they're not judging you.
You
feel like they are.
Yeah. And even if they did, they might look at you and make a quick judgment, and then they turn away and you've forgotten. Right? So even if you are the victim of being judged, it doesn't change your life. You can handle it.
Yeah, okay. Hey, can I put you on the spot, John?
Yeah, of course.
Would you, the Kintsugi Heroes?
Yeah, right. my podcast efforts.
Yeah.
Or part of it. Kintsugi Heroes is a great program, series of podcasts with lots of stories of resilience and triumph.
Inspiration, lessons.
And brokenness teachings, coming through.
Healings.
Kintsugi is the art of Japanese ceramics where the ceramics break. And then they're put together with gold mortar and become more beautiful than the original.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
So I reckon it'd be a great opportunity for you two to do an interview.
I'll send the invitation.
I just think there's so many wonderful teachings today and from his 3 years of experience that many of us blokes could pick up on. And I think it would probably be a little bit more intense with just a one-on-one.
I'm doing the what you're in the way, in other words.
Yeah, not for the first time.
But I'm doing a series where, you know, it's a slow burn, right?
Okay.
But where I'm talking to men, and I haven't designed it just for men, but they're the blokes I encounter.
Yeah.
I'm talking to men like you, Wes, who have looked into the boiling pot. Right, and seen the heat and seen the fire and seen the pain, and you haven't flinched. You've accepted that has to be dealt with, right?
Yeah.
And what I want to talk about in those series is not the story, but the heart. You know, can you tell me about what happened, what it felt like? You know, what was the experience? And I don't mean to ask now, but right. So, you know, I'm asking those things.
Would you consider that?
I'd
really like you to do it, man.
Because this, you know, the whole point of this is to share, to teach, and to help.
Yeah.
That's why you turn up every week.
Yeah.
Because you want to make a difference. You've got something to share. You've got a platform to make a difference. So that's why I think you turn up.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, the more you put your hand up to help, the more we're going to have a better place to live, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, guys will work it out.
We get a gang together of blokes who have, you know, gone through violence to kindness.
Yeah.
We'll go out and love these blokes to death.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I look back now, you know, like 2014, my marriage breakdown, or 13 it was really. And I like, if I had a podcast so I could listen or just, I'm sure there were things there where, you know, I could get on YouTube or whatever.
Do you think it's really come to light like in the last 10 years though? Has it?
Totally.
Because I remember when we did the Cranback Classic, we thought we were, you know, making a difference, and it was such a great thing for me and Rob to do in respect.
Yeah.
It started off as a memorial for Brad, but it ended up being a fundraiser and a real awareness campaign. For blokes, you know, to get together and have a chat and
the camaraderie, man.
Yeah,
it was, golf and the
band. Awesome. But then we definitely didn't start it, but it's become more popular, I guess, and it's probably the wrong word. There's more people aware of it, I guess.
It's bubbled to the surface.
Yeah.
They've been encouraged by this. They've felt inspired by it, and they've seen the results that you've gotten out of it and gone, maybe I could do something. It's certainly one of the reasons why I'm doing this. It's a massive reason.
But it's a response to a need. Yeah. Right. Well, before when I said the system's not meeting the needs.
Yeah.
Right. What happens then is on the ground, people who are, you know, we spoke about lodestones, people who have some desire to give and some capacity to hold, they see others struggling and they go, we've got to do something about it.
Yeah. And they can't watch.
Yeah. And they can't. And the community, you know, the systems aren't filling that, right? There are people being left. Yeah. I'm for Kintsugi Heroes. Mm. I'm doing a series up in Broke that went through devastating floods in 22.
Oh, really?
Right, and we're capturing stories of people getting through the floods and their experience and the post flood and the blokes who helped and so on. Yeah. And I was up at the Broke Village Markets last week, and they, you know, have just talking to folks, and there are guys there like, oh, I don't need to talk here. What did I do? Down the road did it. And he said, oh, yeah, but what about the, you know, you organised all the trucks to come in and check. Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, people had stuff they needed and there was food. Oh, yeah, yeah, we organised that. Like, these guys are amazing, right?
Yeah, real heroes.
And they respond because they have, you know, you look at them and you go, oh, these are rough country blokes. But it's, they, you know, they're grounded to what's real. They have, and the earth has heart. Mm. You know, they're like connected to land, and that comes out in them, and they respond. Sometimes I just think, you know, if we got rid of all the cities and just lived in, you know, country towns again, maybe we'd be kinder to each other. There's no guarantee, and country towns have their issues, but
well, that's a good point.
Country towns are way more connected than. Suburbs or cities.
Absolutely. So how's that changed you? Like, well, not changed you, but what are some of the big impacts? Because you've come from living in the Northern Beaches, right? Yeah. Like myself.
Yeah.
And then you've gone to the country. You've gone to Nabiak or Bunya.
Yeah. Apart from everyone knowing your business, which is the downside.
Yeah.
But, you know, just the fact that people wave as they drive past.
Like, right.
People used to come up and say, why is everyone waving at me?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
they're saying hello.
They're great values, aren't they?
Like the fact that that's become foreign.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad.
I remember you took me to an auction once, a cattle auction.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like immediately there, like, you know, and I thought to myself, God, he's only been here for 4 years or something in Nabiak, or having cattle for 4 years. And I almost felt this sense of family or belonging. And you probably knew most of those people at the cattle auction. But you started to talk about the impacts of prices having on families in the community. This month it could be with calf and cow, you know, 900. And in next month it could be 1,400. And the impact that has.
Yeah, it's a cruel.
Like, it was just, there was so many, I don't know, it was like just a completely different life.
It is very earthy, very grounded. Yeah. but it's very localized as well. And they,
I thought I was in Yellowstone.
You still lose more. Like there's also culture, so we lose more men, right? Rural men, you know, per capita. Yeah. Then you know, like it's double city numbers, right?
Well, that, so, and, that, and that's, I assume you're referring to farmers, is right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because it's so cruel, like,
yeah.
To rely on the income from the land, far out.
And the town itself, right, is you know relies on the success of the people around it, the farmers and industry.
And it's an industry, right? Cattle, sheep, that fluctuates more than the Italian lira. Mm. You know, like. To be like $500 difference over a course of a month or two.
Yeah.
And I understand it's supply and demand. Imagine if the real estate market or stock market was like that. Yeah. And that's what you've got to live in every day. And then you'd have that, oh, shit, you know, I could have, that's cost me 10 grand. You know, that next month I could have made.
It's tough. I think the rural communities rally around when there's a disaster or a crisis.
Yeah.
They're all quick to drop everything to put their hand up, what can we do?
Because their values are so much more enriched, isn't it?
I think so.
Of community.
Yeah, I think because they're all so close knit and their
connections, everything.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's made a huge impact on you. Like every time, I love hearing you talk about, you know, like yesterday.
It's a great life. There's no doubt about it. I love the rural scene.
I remember going up there and there was a cow stuck in the pond or in the mud because it had been raining a lot. We had to get the cow out.
Yeah.
It's just, I love it. Yeah. You know, and it's encouraged other mates like Benny to get up there and Tracy. Man, thanks, mate. Yeah, 5 years since coming on. I'd love to do this again. I'd love you, and I mean that. I'd love you to do a Kintsugi episode, maybe have a look at a couple of them.
And I've got my booking agent sorted out now. I'll get you going.
That'd be wonderful. And if anyone's got any questions they want to put to Wes, send them through to me on 0404-066-777-666. Also, don't forget, you can give John a call. John does one-on-one counselling or face-to-face or over Zoom.
Coaching and support, mate. I don't counsel anyone.
Okay, there you go.
I'll put in a plug. I've got wayahead.org.au. You can link up. There's a men's online
that was the email you sent
support group that I do monthly, right? So, and that's like it's kind of tough to the idea of like online, anxiety support for blokes, right?
Yeah.
But
is this a free service or
free?
Is it...
Mate, everything I do is free.
I know.
Right. So I drive a 2003 Toyota Echo, right? I get it. Reaching out to with an idea of being anxious is a tough thing.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Right. So, a part of the anxiety, part of the mystery is ask yourself a question. Can I talk to someone online in a safe way?
Yeah. Right.
My answer would be, you can. Give me a call and we chat about it.
So you can get John on 0422-672-049, 0422-672-049. Hey, incidentally, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to give away a jar of my family Manuka honey.
You beauty.
Which is my cousin's established a business. Of course, it was originally established. Watson and Son were the original founders back in 1976 or thereabouts, which is my mum's maiden name, Watson. And they were the first people to establish a Manuka honey farm. So this one's set in the North Island, and it's called Kaiora, not Kiora, Kaiora, K-A-I-O-R-A. Or the website is B to Body, B, the number 2, body.com. The person that can come to me with the best suggestion or a great topic for us to talk about,
case study version,
a good warriors episode perhaps. I said I want to do a whole episode on surrender.
That's interesting. We'd have I'll to send do you a warrior jar. And surrender.
Yeah.
One and then the other.
Oh, right? You could. Yeah. This is what it's all about. So the first, give me a great suggestion. I've got a jar of Manuka honey. We know how good it is. You can get me on 0404-077-666 or brad_spillane, SPILLANE, @yahoo.com.au. Man. Wes, thanks, mate.
No worries,
great show, man.
Yeah.
It's been the longest show we've done in probably 3 years.
Yeah, right. So. Mate, thanks for having me. It's been great. And I just want to congratulate you, mate. I really...
thanks, man.
I'm so proud of what you've done and who you are and keep doing it. So
thanks, mate. Well done. It means an enormous amount to me hear you say
you
that.
You deserve it.
Well, and, you know, I'm very fortunate, as I said. I just surround myself with blokes that's a bit smarter than me. In your case, a lot smarter. And I'm very grateful in return. Yeah. And it's meant a lot because, you know, we've done a number of shows. John and I have probably cracked up to 20 almost now, and Bodie 100.
Wow. That's serious.
So, and we're able to bring some wonderful content and get some blokes to sit in the discomfort of darkness and shit and talk about those things that we need to do.
Comfort of discomfort.
Yeah.
And thank you, mate.
Yeah, and nice to meet you, John, and you're made of the right stuff, mate. So keep...
That's a great compliment. I'll take
he
that.
He shit hasn't taken compliments, mate. He often deflects.
And I'm happy to work with you on another project, mate, or whatever you want to do, mate.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. And, mate, thank you for your insights. They're not easy to open up and offer, and I acknowledge that, mate. That's awesome, bro.
Yeah. Mm. Just remember, guys, let's not be so quick to judge and be kind to each other. Sometimes it's hard to like love, but you can't hate it. You can't hate love, man.
Mate, that sounds like a song.
Big thanks to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour hire in the manufacturing industry for all your staffing solutions. Give Craig a call, 0416 700 870. And I guess it's a great opportunity for us to segue into a couple of announcements of people that show sponsorship and love for the radio station here, 89.1. All right, we've got a call coming in. I'll head off to some advertisements. Thanks, guys.